Sirenauts, and welcome to this week's Observations. I'm your host, Sovereign Sire, and I'm brought to you by the Bon Vivants and Ne'er-Do-Wells at Julieland.com. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Richard Avery.
Good morning, sunshine.
You seem much better spirits than you were the other day.
I am. The drugs have kicked in.
They have?
Yes.
Are you no longer suffering from chronic pain?
No, I took a Vicodin this morning. I'm good.
Fancy. Today with me is Steve Agee.
Agee.
I made it fancy.
You only see my name on Twitter. That's why.
Yeah. But that's like, so today we're just talking about you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Really? Just good?
Yeah. I'm on a high. I saw Steely Dan last night, and
so jealous.
It was awesome.
I believe it was really.
They're probably one of my top five favorite bands. But I've never seen them live.
So since we're right into the music thing, what was your first concert?
Depeche Mode.
What year?
80. I forget the year, but it was the Black Celebration album Irvine Meadows.
What?
And you're like, dude, this rocks.
Yeah.
Were you goth then?
It was weird. I mean,
gosh, I'm trying to imagine that now.
My favorite band, I was not goth, but my favorite band in high school in the 80s was Oingo Boingo.
Okay, that is awesome.
Band that I've maybe seen. More than any other band.
What's his name? The drummer, Vato?
Yeah, Johnny Vato.
Yeah.
And the 80s for me were all about synth. You know, Howard Jones, Depeche Mode, The Cure. And like we were saying earlier, I saw Jane's Addiction in like 88 or 89. And I was immediately like, I've never seen any, this is not hair metal.
I know.
This is not glam. It's so angry and aggressive.
When you think about it at that time, I always tell people like when that time, which was amazing about it, was like, they were so unique because they weren't a metal band like that was playing the strip.
Yeah.
They weren't this alternate. They were so unique to LA, especially because they were just something completely different.
Yeah, they're just playing the shit bars, you know, like Hell's Gate and
Scream. Do you remember Scream?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a friend of mine used to run that place.
They really were seminal in changing things, you know.
Lollapalooza came along.
Yeah. Yeah, Lollapalooza, which I saw so many bands. Lollapalooza is responsible for me seeing so many bands that I never, ever would have gone to see normally.
Right.
You know,
like
Ice Cube or, you know, even Nine Inch Nails I wasn't into at the time. I think they're great now, but I was like, in Ministry and...
Oh, yeah. Just, so you went the first year then and you saw...
I went the first year and every year for probably like five or six...
Yeah. I only saw the first year. I saw like 10 shows the first year and about one show the second year.
So were you like sort of coming of age right at the birth of sort of alternative... Yeah,
it was the alternative genre. It was the perfect... I was like 19 years old. It was just perfect, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what was that like in terms of like...
It was so
great. I mean, it's so hard to identify with like a time before like...
A time before the Beatles.
No, like a time before all an indie stuff was just kind of available in all these outlets, and they're like, I've just always had infinite amounts of choice when it comes to movies, music.
Yeah, you had
like,
to find,
you know what I mean?
Like, this was at a time where you had to find bands through your friends, or you'd hear them on the radio, or in a record store. And that was it. I mean, there was no internet.
No, not really. Not for that stuff, no. And then there was also, I always tell people, I used to find out about bands from other bands.
Yeah.
You know, you'd go see a band, you'd go and talk to somebody, and they'd go, yeah, I'm really into this band or into this musician. And,
yeah.
And you'd be like, wow, that's really cool. You'd go listen to them, and you'd go, oh, my God, that's amazing.
Yep.
I was the same thing when it came to Nine Inch Nails. I knew nothing about them, and it was until I saw them at Lollapalooza.
And they were, yeah, I saw them in L.A. or Irvine Meadows on Lollapalooza. I didn't know them at all, and... They were, I mean, much like Jane's Addiction, they were really angry. I don't think they finished their set because they trashed all their instruments. And it was just exciting to see as like a 19-year-old. You're like, fuck yeah.
So like what kind of kid were you? Like where did you grow up?
I grew up in Riverside, California, just an hour east of Los Angeles. And I was a really super shy kid until I was about 15. And then some seniors took me and got me drunk one night, and everything changed. I was like, this is, they took us out, and we, three of us each got a bottle of Boone's Farm.
Okay, I know that. I'm familiar with that.
Drank Boone's we each Farm. Drank a yeah. whole bottle, Starry and I got Hill. So drunk and had so much fun. And then from that point on, I was drunk almost every day. I'm so surprised
that, so
I'm alive.
That's how the comedians are born. That's
kind of yeah.
Angry and then add alcohol. I was and like, stir it.
I was like, oh, I'm not shy when I'm drunk. I'll talk to girls at parties and.
That's funny.
It's
though. Like
dangerous.
I have a similar experience to the, like that too, as well. Like where just all of a sudden drugs, I'm like, oh, dude, it like yeah. released the hounds.
It got a little out of control. I yeah. got kicked out of a few schools and sent to military school.
Oh shit! Okay, tell me about military school. What was that like?
It was exactly how you would think. It was weird.
So
because
your life was basically an '80s movie.
Yes, I was going to say it's
essentially.
Weird.
Because like every 80s movie I've seen is like, we're going to send you to military
yes,
school.
Yes, you see Bill and Ted's, they're like, if you don't straighten up, my dad said he's going to send me to military school. And I actually got sent to military school. Like, that's
Which
the one,
one
thing you never saw. I got right. sent to Valley Forge Military Academy where they filmed the movie Taps.
Oh my God.
With Sean Penn, yep. Tom Cruise.
Timothy Hutton.
A movie where the plot is they're going to close the military school down, so the students take over to prevent that from happening. And I've always said, if they announced they were going to shut that place down, we would have been helping them pack.
So how old were you when you went to military school?
I was like 16.
And how long were you there?
2 years.
So what in that two, did you always know you were funny? Like, was that, did you kind of know you wanted to be a stand-up, or was
I always wanted to be a stand-up since I was like 11.
I'm trying to think of what comedians were around then. Like,
well, it was because of Dr. Demento. He okay. was syndicated here in Los mm-hmm. Angeles on Sunday nights on KMET.
Yeah.
And that's how I would just lay in bed with my radio on listening to Dr. Demento. And that's how I found out about Weird Al, yeah. George Carlin. And, you know, at 11, that's like when kids start buying music and... And all my friends were, you know, buying like Michael Jackson albums and stuff like that. And I was buying George Carlin and Richard Pryor albums at like 11. My first album was George Carlin, A Place for My Stuff.
So it kind of makes sense that you would be
yeah,
a behavioral problem.
Like, I always knew.
So wow. Well, like for the 2 years in military school, were you completely away from your family? And
yeah.
Like, what? So what was that like? Like to be
horrible. It's weird because at the time it's the worst experience of your life, mm-hmm. but then when you look back on it, you're like, I had some really fun times there,
and
like,
it wasn't
I
as
really
bad as
got,
you thought it was.
Got into a lot of trouble, yeah. But like had fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was. I mean, it paid off too. I, you know, a couple years ago, sold a pilot to FX about military school.
That's awesome.
It didn't get picked up, but I got paid to write about my shitty experience.
I just think like. You almost feel like, God, I'm glad I went to military school. You know, thank God I didn't go to boring high school. I would have written a boring script.
Or no script at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when you got out of military school, military school didn't change you? Did it make you more well-behaved?
I went from getting D's and F's to straight A's. Oh, wow.
It was actually effective.
It did help, yeah. I mean, I did a lot more drugs when I went there because the thing is, when you go to military school, you have daily inspections. They go through your room. So it's hard to hide like a fifth of Jack Daniels, but it's easy to hide drugs, you know, in a right. light bulb socket or something. So drugs were a lot more rampant in military school.
But you learned a lesson in sort of like how to sort of be more sort of like an undercover loadie and more like a functional addict.
Yeah.
Which then
absolutely functional.
Which is highly useful in
yeah.
adult life.
Yeah.
So it was
it
teaching
off.
You like real world practical skills like orienteering, yeah. et cetera.
Orienteering. How to read a Thomas Brothers guide.
Yeah.
Remember those? Now we just have GPS.
I talk about
there was a time when we had to, if you wanted to go to, you know, an audition or a party in LA, you had to.
Page 32, grid A4.
And it was all grids.
Yep. When I first moved to LA, that was our thing. Like, ever since I moved here, and then you tell everybody who moved to LA, they say, first thing you buy, Thomas Guide.
Yeah.
First thing you buy, and get that in your car, keep that in your car. And then, and to this day, I jokingly tell my assistants, they'll say, like, oh, you know, because you have all smartphones, and you're like, this is easy. I go, back in my day, we had to do things.
You had to go
production
a
with
book.
And then if I was doing a shoot in some other city, and we needed to hire rent equipment or fire an assistant, we used the Yellow Pages. And they're like, what are the Yellow Pages? I'm like, shut up. You know, like,
it's crazy. Me and my dad have that kind of fight because he likes to go out on his motorcycle and do all kinds of stuff, and he is super connected and attached to like physical maps or whatever. And it's like, it's so foreign. Like, I don't even know how to really read one, you know? And he's like, but his whole thing is like, well, I'm out in the woods or something happens. Like, I don't get a signal. Like, I can still get where I need to go.
That is a good point. They still come in handy now and then.
But a Thomas guide was I always joke like, hey, where's the meeting at? You know, page 32, A4. And you'd be like, oh, okay.
I'm surprised they didn't get into the app game when computers.
Yeah, I know.
Because they could have used a GPS.
Yeah.
Thomas Brothers GPS.
At least the brand
everyone, no one anticipated technology would be as, like, grow as exponentially and be as sort of
crazy.
Like.
When did you move to LA?
95. And I actually came to LA with a band.
Okay.
I had always wanted to be a comedian, but I didn't think it was a thing I could do, you know? I didn't know any comedians. I just thought it was something you were kind of born into, a, you know, entertainment family. And
the weird cabal. Yeah. Like a secret brotherhood.
I didn't think it was an option. And I was playing in bands and, like, you know, when I was like, it was like right after I saw Jane's Addiction, I bought a bass and I would just sit and learn their songs and just every band I would buy their CDs and listen to their songs and learn them. And so I started playing in a band and we had one rehearsal and we wrote like five punk songs in one rehearsal. And I was so excited that I went into the LA Weekly. And I was like just looking for the numbers, you know, for clubs and just trying to book us on shows. And our very first show was at the Whiskey.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was awesome. And I was immediately hooked.
I could just see like, it's that easy? Oh my God.
So are you
it's
like one of those people that kind of tends to stumble into stuff because you don't know it's supposed to be hard?
Yeah,
because I do that a lot where it's like I've had a lot of opportunities like that with stuff where I just didn't know you weren't supposed to do it that way. And like I ended up sort of like sneaking in the back door.
I think that's the best way too is it's just like, blind ignorance.
Yeah. And it's like my friends, you know, actor friends or people who've come to LA and they're like here for 6 months and they book a TV show and they think, what's everybody complaining about? It's actually really easy. And you're like, shut the fuck up.
A great example is Ron Funches, who was a Portland comedian. And he's so goddamn funny. And I mean, he's on the show Undateable. And he's just blowing up. Like, he's booking everything, movies. And he moved to L.A. and was on Undateable. And I think in less than a year, maybe a year. Well deserved because he's so fucking funny.
Yeah, but.
But what an asshole. Let's just be honest, shall we?
Bitch.
Fucking dick.
Probably owns a house now.
Exactly. I've seen it happen. And you just sit there and I always tell people, like, there's nothing you can do about it. You can't worry about what everybody else is doing. And you got to just.
Yeah, everyone has their own trajectories.
So how long did the band last? And what was the name?
The Grazers.
And
I mean.
Not named after Brian Grazer?
No. I think, did I do that?
Yeah, it's okay.
Oh, you're magic. Oh, I thought you were like a wizard for a minute.
Light
I was like, oh, I kind of like it all dim. It's like sexy.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
We played, you know, for a couple years. I was the only one that committed and fully moved to LA. I was like the LA contact. Our drummer still lived in San Diego. So we would play shows in San Diego, shows in LA, shows in Riverside. And it just got to be too much. And the band just kind of fell apart. And I tried to justify staying in LA by enrolling at the Musicians Institute.
Okay.
Like, I was like, I got to stay in LA. So I'm just going to enroll in this place so I can stay here and with all the other.
And how many years did you go there?
Just 1 year.
Oh, it's the worst.
So when did you do like your first stand up? Like, was that?
I mean, I was probably 18 or 19 when I first did stand up and there was like an open mic contest at like the Laugh Stop in Montclair and it went great. I mean, my first time up was great and I think that's why I kept doing it. Cause if it had been horrible, I probably never would have done it again.
No.
So how long were you doing stand-up before you felt like it was that's what you were doing?
I mean, honestly, not till probably a few years ago.
Not till last week's show.
I would do it off and on until, you know, it wasn't until I started doing the Sarah Silverman program that, like, doors really opened and I could get on shows. Like, I could just go to the improv and do stand-up. And that's when I started just doing it regularly and getting better at it. Mm.
But how did you get on the Sarah Silverman show? Were you?
I met her because a friend of hers was doing a play here in LA. He wrote a play that he was doing, and somebody dropped out like a week before the play started, and they needed somebody who could. They needed like a comedic actor, and they needed someone who could play guitar too, because it was a play about a band. And so a friend of mine was like, "Oh, you should talk to my friend Steve." And so I did it. I learned the songs in that week, and then opening night, Sarah came to the show, and we just totally hit it off and became like BFFs right away. Mm. And we're just together all the time. Just we would just hang out and play video games and smoke weed for years. And then she wrote her Comedy Central pilot, and she wrote a part for me.
I'm a big fan. I've always wanted to meet her.
She's terrific.
Yeah. She seems like awesome. Kind of person I like.
That's awesome.
Very funny.
Yeah.
And so that opened the doors here in Hollywood for you, doing that pretty much?
Yeah. And I mean, it's really weird because... It was just the other day I was like trying to think of like if someone were to say what advice would you give, because like how did you get to where you are, and it's I can trace it back through so many different people. Like I have a career because of Sarah Silverman, but I met Sarah Silverman because of her friend Dave who wrote that play.
Right.
But I met Dave because my friend Jim Giordano suggested me.
Yeah.
And I met Jim at a small theater company after I got voted out of the Groundlings. So I can kind of thank the Groundlings for voting me out.
Okay, so I feel like we're missing this whole thing. Okay, so you went to the Musicians Institute, and then you went to did that for a year.
After my
then
band,
what did you do?
After my band broke up, I started dating a girl who was taking classes at the Groundlings.
Okay. Can you explain what, I mean, I kind of know what that is, but
it's an improv theater like Second City or UCB. It's like improv and sketch comedy. Saturday Night Live gets a lot of its people from.
Do you think that's like a worthwhile thing? Just like I've been working on like a web series, and I'd considered like taking classes.
Yeah,
so
I
was like maybe to make.
I honestly don't regret it.
It wouldn't
all.
Hurt. You wouldn't hurt at all. I think you learn.
But like it's like so hard. It's because they've become such machines and such institutions at this point. You start to wonder.
But if
like,
you
is
go,
is it worth it the way it was 10 years ago or something?
I think absolutely. Kind of, I think I tell people, if you go into it. Not having high hopes of like, I'm going to go to the Groundlings and I'm going to end up on Saturday Night Live, because when it doesn't work out, which it doesn't for most people,
mm-hmm. right?
It won't be as crushing.
Yeah.
But you go to learn to improvise, to write, you know?
It's funny because I tell every time I have some friend who comes into town and a lot of girls, and they all say like, oh, I don't want to be an actress, but I want to do this and I want to do that. Or whatever the dream is, I always tell them, go take an acting class. Go take an improv class. And they go, well, what's that got to do with what I want to do? I go, because you know what it does? It gives you these tools that you can use for other things. And it's like...
Also the networking, I think, too. It's like...
It's yeah, exactly.
It puts
and
you in the
never
company.
Know. Like, you never know. But the one thing I say to people, I've never known one talented person in LA get in trouble for knowing too much. So I always say, like, learn. Educate yourself. Learn
and
everything about
when
everything.
When you're pursuing a career in acting or music or writing yeah. or whatever it is, you have a lot of free time.
Yeah.
Yes.
So why wouldn't you invest in?
Well, yeah, that's exactly. That's kind of been my thing. Like, because I'm a writer, and one of the reasons I got into adult was because it gives you a high paycheck with like a lot of free time
yeah.
to
and a lot of sex.
The writing
and a lot of sex.
Lot.
But it's like you do. It's like a lot of time off, and it's like it can be like a cause of like major depression if you kind of. It's just when you kind of yeah. has to have all this free time, and you're kind of if you're not super disciplined. I know very few creative people that are like amazingly disciplined. Maybe like Sarah Benincasa.
That's part of the artistic. Yeah, you probably are.
Well, no, but like it's I think like Sarah Benincasa, I think Marc Maron, like those are two people I know that are like they are always
driven.
Working and like they're always driven. But like that's two out of like I know a lot of really creative people.
I've said it for years for people all the time I just said it actually last night to Audrey. I said the hardest part of my career all these years is that having discipline enough to make yourself do the work, getting up and saying, you know, I could not do nothing today, or you know, I got to get stuff done, because I always say if I don't do it, who will? So I'm gonna get my shit done. Problem I always have is I'm blessed because I love what I do. Mm-hmm. I love every bit of it. It mm-hmm. might drive me crazy, but I love it, and I yeah. don't see myself do, and I enjoy the process. So. I can't do anything without working. I work every minute of every day. I don't
yeah.
care. It's how I do. And I do like 50 things at once.
You should always be doing something
yeah.
related to what you want to do. Even yeah. you know, if you have free time, if you want to be an actor, at least watch some movies or something, like yeah. educate yourself
exactly.
And go to a movie or you should be writing, you know,
anything.
Yeah. And we live in a great time now where you don't have to rely on someone to hire you to act in their short film or what.
Make your own.
You can make a film on your iPhone. You know, there's editing. Everyone has editing software.
Yeah.
In your iPhone, in your computer. It, like, when I first got a computer, that stuff didn't exist. There wasn't Final Cut for Apple when it first came out.
No, I agree. Exactly. And I tell people that's like, it's easier now than ever to do things, to do more. It's makes it easier for everybody, and there's a lot of crap out there. But I tell people all the time, just don't stop feeding yourself. Don't stop feeding your brain and pushing yeah. yourself, and don't stop, you know, find whatever inspires you and then go do it.
Yeah, it's great.
And when if you fail, you fail.
Yeah, because yeah, you learn. Cares. Yeah.
That's how I learned. That's how I learned to, you know, keep doing drugs until you fucking pass out. Okay, I know next time not to do the whole eight ball. Let's yeah. just do half the eight
well,
ball.
Well, I mean, I'm also like, I'm more productive than I think I am, because if I sit with my, like,
totally.
Two nights ago, I was sitting with my friends, and they're like, I was like, it's like Ginny and Brito and this guy, Matt, and it was like, what'd you do today? And it's like, Matt's like doing the Maria Bamford show, like he's doing office PA stuff for that. Yeah. And she's like working on something, and I was like, I submitted to like three places, and then I pitched over here, and I was like working on the first draft of the fucking TV show I was doing. And they're like, that was a lot of stuff. I'm like, yeah, but I did it all on my couch, so. So also, see, for me, it's like that feeling of like, but I did it on my couch, so it doesn't feel like, or a lot of the work you do as an artist is like solitary.
Yeah.
And so it can feel like you're not really working, because it's like, I did it alone in my house without really interacting with people. So yeah. it doesn't feel the same as like when you go to a set or right. you go sit in a writer's room or whatever, and you kind of are developing ideas and interacting in a way. And it's like yeah. this feeling that like, so that's why I was thinking like, oh, maybe it'd be useful to go to something like The Groundlings or something where it's like you're just kind of thrust in with other people.
I think that stuff's good, because like, I think the biggest reason, number one, you get these tools, it gives you confidence. It also, the fear factor helps. You get that, yeah. oh, I'm scared, but yeah, you know, you need that. And then also, like you said, ultimately it's the network. And you never know who you're going to meet in these kind yeah. of things. You never know what door it's going to open.
I've worked with so many people who I've met through Groundlings. Like it's... And at the time, and you may not even know it, but at the time when I got voted out of the Groundlings, it was after a period of like 5 years where I'd put my whole life into it. I was like, I really did want to be on SNL, and I knew that, you know, they got people from there, they got people from Second City, but I wasn't in Chicago. So I was like, I'm going to just really work at this. You know, I worked at a Starbucks to work my way through it, and I eventually started working in the theater doing odd jobs to pay for my classes. And I was there for 5 years and like was friends with everybody. And then I did my final show and they just voted. And like,
my question, first of all, you weren't friends with everybody, because if you were friends with everybody,
that's true,
you would still be there.
Can you explain that process to me? Because I'm like, so you,
is it kind of like,
what's the process for?
Well, there's four levels of classes. Okay.
But my question is like, is yeah. it kind of, you just gave me an idea for a TV show.
Yeah.
Seriously. Like, it's like Survivor, you know, where they kick people off an island, but it's filled with all comedians. And they make
yeah.
it's like, then you make everybody make routines, and if they don't like it, you get voted
off
the
island. Well, that's Last Comic Standing, basically. But they, I mean, there's four levels of classes, and the first two are all improv. Like
okay.
the beginner level is improv.
Okay.
Then there's an intermediate level of improv. And then after each level, the teacher decides, okay, we're going to let him go. He's ready to go on to the next level. And then you get to the third level, which is, a writer's workshop. So they teach you about sketch comedy and writing, and then you write for, I think it's like 12 weeks, and then you do a show, and then the company comes and they vote. Yeah, let's move them on to the advanced level, you know, writer's workshop. So I got up to the advanced level, and you write for 6 weeks, you do a show, and then you write for six more weeks and do a second show. And for them to vote on you to whether or not they're going to let you into the Sunday company and be part of, you know, the theater, the company members have to be at both shows. Like, if you want to vote on, if you're in the company and you want to vote on these people, you have to see them perform both shows.
Uh-huh.
So we did our first show and everyone showed up and it was great. The night of our second show, there was a bomb threat on Melrose. So we had to scrap the show. We couldn't do it that night. We had to move it to the next night when nobody could show up. I think two people showed up to our show.
So those are only two people that
So only two people voted. as far as I know. And I guess they were people that were not fans of mine.
What kills me, that this whole level thing, everything you described to me, honestly, sounds like Scientology.
I mean, it's that way, I think.
Right?
Any...
Am I wrong? I mean, it's like, you're at the next level, and now you... get to the next level.
Well, it's like, I mean, it's then like, there's a secret it's level. School. I mean, it's really school. It's,
yeah, I know. I've met lots of actors through the years.
How long did it take you to go through those levels?
It was like, I mean, 4 or 5 years. It took so long because between the third and the final level of classes there was like a year-long waiting list. Because for the basic levels, there's like 10 classes going on. So they can always fit people in, but there's only one advanced level class in the year. So there's like a long waiting list. And me and my girlfriend at the time were just like, we have a year, let's just do something. And so we just decided to move and we went to Oregon for a year. And that was awesome.
We're in Oregon.
Ashland.
That's where I was born.
Were you really?
Mm-hmm.
Did I know this? Did we talk about this?
No.
Probably not. I lived in Ashland, Oregon for a year.
I grew up there. I got to like, that's Ballet in the Park is how I grew up. It was a very contrast existence between...
Yeah.
Like being poor white trash on the double wide trailer and then going to see Ballet in the Park.
Yeah.
But it instilled Ashland. Very early in me that kind of desire, like performing. I was in ballet from the time I was like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I ended up going to performing arts high school.
No shit.
I went into an MFA, did all my writing, like major in playwriting, then went to an MFA. But all of that was spawned by that early experience of being like all those programs they had in Ashland,
yeah.
like the Shakespeare in the Park, Ballet in the Park,
yeah.
all of that stuff. Like, it worked. It was this thing where it's like, I was in an economic class where I would have never been exposed to that kind of stuff. But because of the nature of the town, like, I love, Ashland is like dear to my, it's so close to my heart in terms
amazing.
Of like, it's just an awesome place.
And
you could drink
timeless.
The tap water.
Yeah, the Lithia water.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't even plan on it. We're like, let's just find a place to go for a year. And we got in my truck and started driving north. And we got into Ashland and we're like, oh, this is fucking awesome. And we immediately rented a hotel, not a hotel, an apartment. And then we came back to LA, got all our shit and went there for a year.
Oh. Yeah, it's a great, it's beautiful. Applegate Lake, like all the, just.
You could have gone
like
to New York.
I couldn't have afforded that. I did
Ashland
that
is-
for a year too. I did New York when I was like 22 and didn't even make it a year before I ran out of money.
Yeah, New York's really, really hard. I was there for 2.5, 3 years and I was pretty industrious and ingenious in sort of finding living arrangements.
Yeah.
But I was in places from like Greenpoint to like Bed-Stuy to
Ooh.
Yeah, Bed-Stuy was fucking rough.
Yeah.
It was.
And then a park bench.
No, but I ended up with living with a hoarder. And
what?
Oh.
In downtown Manhattan.
My God.
In a huge like he was a hoarder, but I got to live in downtown Manhattan for relatively cheap. But the thing is, it was like everything about living in New York was hard. I mean, even if you went to the grocery store, it was just like, well, how are you going to carry that shit home? And where are you going to store it when you get there? Because everything's like literally every
doing
aspect
laundry,
of existence.
Dragging my
yes.
big ass bag
and
four
it
blocks
on
to a
you.
Laundromat.
And it wears on you and you're doing it like through the last winter I was there, 7 blizzards. I mean, it's like it wears on you. And I was a model there. So I was like taking my little, I was like a nude model for all these Wall Street types. And so taking my little go bag and like taking the subway all over the city to do these jobs. And it was so difficult. And I just recently got to visit maybe like a month or two ago with all like my dirty porno money. And it was the first time that I could go and like actually had, not like a lot of money, but had enough money to enjoy it. I got to stay in like a nice hotel in Midtown and I go jogging in Central Park. And I was like, oh, yeah, New York's great.
When you have money, New York is
money,
really the best
like,
place.
Yeah.
Did you ever do any modeling for students at like the Art Students League, the painters?
Mm-mm. No, but I got to shoot for like, it was, this is one of those things of like being too ignorant to know better.
Yeah.
I was flown out there by a photographer that was shooting me for God's Girls.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he thought I could have a career. Like this is back when I thought I was gonna make a couple $1,000 and go to Europe and write a novel. That's why I was doing nude modeling.
The dream. Yeah.
And he was like, I think you could make money. So I went and got one of those Taschen books.
Yeah.
Of like the 50 greatest erotic photographers, whatever. And I found everyone that was alive and living in New York City. And I wrote them and I sent them my picture and my rate to Nude Model. And it was something like 20 of them wrote back and said, okay. And what
nice.
I didn't know is like, here's the rule. The rule is as a model is that like you basically charge like the guys with cameras, like 150. I was charging $150 an hour, which I didn't realize that was actually like an astronomical rate for what I was doing.
But like professional photographers like George Pitts, Richard Kern, Andrew Einhorn, like you're not supposed to actually charge them like you do trade because they're good. Yeah. So I was like, all these people were like, and I didn't know till it was like 6 or 8 months in, I did a thing about working with George Pitts and I had mentioned that like, you know, he paid my rate and did it like, it was like a model reference, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, can you like, don't say that I paid don't you. Tell people that I paid you because like, you know, I don't. And that was the first time I was like, oh, it's like ignorance.
But, like, what, doesn't everyone get paid?
Yeah, but I got shot by all those people and I ended up getting a reputation around the city, which like helped kind of ultimately get me where I was going. Like, I was all flying blind, but yeah. You know what I mean? It's like by being shot by all those people in the first 6 months I was there because I didn't know enough to be shy.
I have a really great photography book that was shot all in this like weird hotel in New York. You may know about it. I forget who the photographer was, but it's all wide angle, not fisheye, but pretty wide angle stuff. It's very vibrant colors, but it's all, I think, prostitutes in this like famous hotel in New York.
Is it Bob Coulter?
Maybe.
That seems, sounds kind of like his.
It's, the photos are really, really rad.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
It sounds familiar. I'm thinking of the hotel more than the photographer.
Right. Well, what's the Chelsea Hotel's the famous one, right?
Yeah, the Chelsea is the seedy, crappy one that was famous for years.
Well, maybe with that, we should wrap up this little section of our podcast and have you back for another segment, perhaps.
Let's do it.
So why don't you tell people where they can find you across the web.
You can find me on all the social media. I have the same username. It's just my full name, at Steve Agee, S-T-E-V-E-A-G-E-E. That's Facebook. That's Instagram, Twitter.
Tinder.
Do you have
MySpace?
Do you have a? Are you doing stand up right now or no?
Friendster.
Or we're like, do you have a calendar?
Yeah, I have nothing. I mean, I do a monthly show at the Baked Potato Jazz Club.
On Lancashire?
Yeah, it's a stand up and music show that I co-host with my friend Brendan Small, who was has a show on Adult Swim called Metalocalypse. And we host it, and what we do is we have like maybe two comedians come on the show. They do a set, and then they do a song with the band. And sometimes they sing, sometimes they'll just play guitar, sometimes they'll play drums, whatever they want to do. But we have like the best band. We've got guys who've played with Zappa.
Who's in the band?
This guy Joe Travers.
Okay.
Who's played with Dweezil Zappa, you know, and he's done. Zappa plays Zappa. He tours with them. They're so good. All like studio musicians. Pete Griffin, who plays bass with Zappa, plays Zappa. Mike Keneally, who played with Zappa, who was his guitar player and keyboardist. So we've got like the best band. These are the guys who I recorded my album with out in Joshua Tree. And so that's once a month. It's usually the second or third Tuesday of the month.
Okay.
Check that out.
I think August 18th is our next show.
Have you ever had Matt Berry on?
I've tried. He hasn't been in town while we've done on a night
he's
that
so
we've
amazing,
done this year.
Right? Like he's good.
He's the ideal guest.
Yeah, he's like perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, I will say adieu to my Sirenauts, and we will come back for another segment.
How do we find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at SovereignSire and at ilovesov.com. Oh, and also on YouTube on the Wisecrack channel where I host a history show called Boss Bitches of History. Bye.